Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
The last time Mom Takafli spoke to anyone outside of her home was the evening of July 29th, 2024, when she had a video call with her mother in Nepal. When her mom called Momta back the next morning at around 11 a.m., her call went unanswered. According to prosecutors in Prince William County, Virginia, that is because by that time, Momta was dead. Momta's husband, Naresh Bhatt, claimed that she had taken off, leaving both him and their 11-month-old daughter behind. After weeks of public outcry and multiple search warrants, Naresh Bhatt was arrested on August 22, 2024, on the charge of concealing a dead body. Over the next several months, there were hearings in which the prosecution detailed a horrific case against Bhatt, one that involved him killing his 28-year-old wife in their Manassas Park home and disposing of her body. Then, on December 2nd, new evidence led prosecutors to charge Bhatt with two more crimes: defiling a dead body and first-degree murder. Now, Naresh awaits trial while the community wonders if he'll ever reveal where Momta is. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to update you on the story of Momta Kafle. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, of course, this being an update, it's a little different because you are aware of this case.
Yes.
But you definitely, you know, don't know all of the details, as you don't actually watch any of the videos that I do on social media.
That's correct. So I have a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Understanding of it, but I don't know the details. I don't know any of the facts that were presented at any of the hearings.
Yeah, I know I've told you some, just, I mean, because I've gone to every hearing. And for those of you who do follow me on TikTok or YouTube, you've seen, you know, the videos that I've been doing of those, and some of them have been really difficult. And I've definitely come home some days and just had a really hard, tough day just listening to it all. So you do know some of it, but I know that a lot of people haven't necessarily been keeping up with the minute details. So we're going to give you basically an overview in this episode. And again, you know, Momta Kafle, it's a local case to us. She's a 28-year-old Manassas Park nurse and mother who disappeared at the end of July. We've done two previous episodes on this case, so if you haven't listened to them, you should probably listen to them before this, because I'm going to leave out a lot, basically, that we've already covered. I've linked the episodes in the show notes. And as I mentioned, I've done an obscene amount of videos on this case, over 100.
Did not realize it was that many.
Yep. And you can find those on TikTok or YouTube. And we are at ATTWGpod on both platforms. So I've got playlists on both of those that you can just go through if you really want to, like I said, get into the nitty gritty of this. Now, our last episode, which was the first update that we did on Momta's case, was recorded on August 28th, 2024. And a lot has happened since then. When we left off, Naresh had been arrested, and I had attended his first few court appearances. And like I said, you can hear all about that in our last episode. So what we're going to be doing is basically covering everything that's happened since we recorded that on August 28th. The two main things that we're going to be talking about is Naresh's marathon bond appeal hearing that took place on September 16th and the new charges against him that just came up on December 2nd. So let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So after his first few hearings, which we talked about in the last episode, Naresh's case was moved from district court to circuit court, and this meant new judges. The first judge that we had was Judge Carol Weimer Jr. And let me tell you, that man was not a fan of any of us.
Us, quote unquote, meaning the media or
meaning
or what?
Anybody who was in the gallery of the courtroom, the lawyers, like the defendant, like anybody. Like he was just not a happy man. In going over my notes when I was writing this, the first thing I have from the hearing on September 5th was, quote, judge is fed up with spectators, end quote. Like he was just fed up with all of it.
Okay.
The community has come out in force for Mamta, and there are dozens of supporters in the courtroom for every single hearing that Naresh has, no matter how small or unimportant. Now, on this day, it appeared as though the defense's strategy was to push the case through as quickly as possible, basically in hopes that the prosecution wouldn't be able to mount as strong of a case. So the reason we were in court on September 5th was because Naresh was waiving his rights to both a grand jury and a preliminary trial. And this then started the speedy trial clock. Now, again, you all, if you've been listening to my show, you know I am not an attorney. So there's a lot of stuff that I've been learning from going to all of these hearings. But if I get anything legal wrong, I do apologize. So in Virginia, as I learned, once you are indicted on a felony, your trial is required to start within 5 months, unless both sides agree on a continuance. So in this case, that would mean that the trial had to start by February 5th, 2025. The prosecution argued that Naresh waiving his rights to a grand jury and a preliminary hearing also waived his rights to a speedy trial, because they were arguing that since he waived all of that, he technically wasn't indicted, so the clock wouldn't start.
Right, because you said the clock starts at indictment, not at entering a plea.
Mm-hmm. But the judge disagreed. He ruled that the waiver of these rights was basically a de facto indictment, so the speedy trial rule remained in effect. The two sides, though, couldn't come up with a mutually agreeable schedule, so another hearing was set for September 16th to find a trial date. In the meantime, we got an idea of what the defense strategy could possibly look like, because that was, I think, our big question was, what was his defense to this going to be? Was it simply going to be what he had initially told police at the welfare check, that
she left,
that she ran off?
Yeah.
Like, was he sticking with that? And we kind of got a few answers. So at a Brady hearing on September 13th, the defense asked for specific evidence to be handed over by the prosecution. Now, you may know from watching My Cousin Vinny, one of the greatest movies of all time and the greatest legal movie ever made, that the prosecution is required to hand over all of the evidence that they have. This is called discovery. However, there's a specific deadline for discovery that's set by the court. So the defense can't just say, you know, on whatever day, like, okay, give me all your evidence. Like, there's a date set that the prosecution has until to deliver the evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it gives the prosecution time to get their case in order.
Exactly.
Instead of just handing over a bunch of raw evidence that may or may not have anything to do with the specific charges.
And bits and pieces, right? Because it's like you're getting evidence throughout trial prep. So, you know, you're going to be delivering things like every day, you know? Yeah. But what the defense was arguing at this hearing was that the prosecution had Brady material. Now, Brady material is evidence that could potentially be exculpatory, meaning that it could potentially prove the defendant's innocence. Now, this evidence is separate from evidence that's covered under the rules of discovery. All Brady evidence is required to be turned over in what the courts call a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, which doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. But what it doesn't mean is that prosecution can just say, well, my discovery deadline is X day, so you'll get it then.
Right.
It typically means that you do have to hand it over sooner, though exactly how much sooner is up for interpretation. So I won't get into the whole back and forth from this hearing, because I did plenty of that over on TikTok. But the long and the short of it is that the defense said they were still investigating where Mompta is. And they believed that the prosecution had evidence in their possession that could help in that investigation and thus prove Naresh's innocence. They were contending that she left on her own accord, which again was Naresh's initial claim.
Uh-huh.
By the time we had gotten to this hearing, new information had been released that on July 27th, which was Mompta's last day at work, she had an Uber scheduled to pick her up and take her home. So Mompta did not drive.
Yeah, I was just going to say that that was normal.
That part was
operating
normal.
Procedure exactly. For them.
Yeah, she did not drive. She did not have a car. So sometimes Naresh would drive her to and or from work, but a lot of times she would take an Uber. So she had one scheduled, but she ended up canceling that ride. And they found that from her phone records and Uber account.
So were they alleging that that was the evidence?
Yeah. So basically, all right, so she canceled the ride, but surveillance video at the hospital where she worked saw her getting picked up by an unknown person in a dark colored sedan.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so that was what the defense wanted. They're like, who is this person? It mm-hmm. was an Uber. She canceled the Uber. Who picked her up? You know, they wanted the video and basically any material that the prosecution had related to that.
Gotcha.
So they were claiming that the driver could have been involved in what had happened to Mompta. Naresh's attorney, Mr. Ben Alverham, pointed out that the driver had not yet come forward, which, you know, he said was pretty suspicious. If it was just like, for instance, a coworker who was giving her a ride home,
right,
you would have thought that by this point, you know, a month and a half or so after she went missing, that they would have said, oh, yeah, Mompta and I worked the same shift. I just drove her home that night. That was me.
Right.
But
especially with all the media attention.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, and everybody at her hospital was very well aware of everything that was happening. And like I said, everybody was coming out in full force for her. So and that includes a lot of her coworkers. So it was it is weird that nobody had come forward by that point. He also said that this person may have known about Mompta's plan to leave and not come back. So again, that is what they were contending, that Mompta left Naresh, left her baby of her own accord, and just was not planning to come back. Now, the prosecution argued against this, saying that whatever happened to Mompta on July 27th did not matter, because we know for a fact that she was alive after that. Remember, she spoke with her mother on the 29th, and Naresh's initial story that he said publicly was that he last saw her on July 31st.
Right.
So Mr. Sweet, the Commonwealth attorney, reminded the court that the charge we were here for was not homicide, but it was concealing a dead body, saying, quote, it doesn't exculpate the defendant from hiding a dead body, end quote.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's his point, right? Because, again, this isn't normal evidence that would be given during discovery. Like, they were going to give the defense the surveillance footage at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The Commonwealth was just arguing that they didn't need to give it to them yet because it wasn't Brady material, because whatever happened to her on July 27th wouldn't prove that Naresh didn't kill her days later.
Right. Because we know that she spoke with her mother the next day on the 28th.
On the 29th.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, regardless of what Naresh said about when she left, that doesn't matter. The fact that we have somebody else that spoke with her saying that she was alive
mm-hmm.
after this ride means that that ride doesn't prove anything as far as Naresh is concerned.
Right. And so that was the argument that the Commonwealth was trying to make. However, the judge ultimately ruled that the prosecution had to turn over the surveillance footage from the hospital where Mompta worked. They were also ordered to disclose whether or not the police officers who did the initial welfare check had told Naresh not to file a missing persons report right away after they visited on August 7th, because that was another big contention that the defense had, because they were like, listen, there have been press releases, there have been news conferences, and all are painting my client in a suspicious light because he says he last saw his wife on the 31st. But he didn't report her missing for like three more days.
Right.
And so Naresh's attorney was like, that's not suspicious. That's just what the police told him to do. So for him, it was really important to get proof of that fact. So it was a slight win for the defense because their Brady request was partially granted. They asked for a couple other things that they didn't get. For instance, they wanted any police reports that were related to the surveillance video, but they didn't get that. But they did get the surveillance video, and they did get text messages between Naresh and the police officers, in which Naresh was kind of like checking back in and saying, hey, like, she hasn't come back. What should I do? Right. So that was a win for the defense. However, what ended up happening was the prosecution then released the entire body cam footage.
Right.
Which you can find on our YouTube channel if you want to watch the entire thing, which if you're following this case, I highly recommend you do watch it if you haven't seen it already, because it is very illuminating. And in my opinion, it really doesn't do Naresh any favors. Throughout the entire 14-minute video, he seems nervous. And to me, none of what he's saying makes any sense.
Yeah, he's kind of all over the place in that interaction with the police.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, what he's saying is very disjointed. He at one point has his baby with him and then hands him off to somebody else that's in the house. He's just kind of talking very quickly and to various points throughout the conversation, almost seeming like he just wants the cops to go away.
Right. And he's just like word vomiting on them.
Yes.
I mean, he is saying so much and they are asking so little.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it was pretty wild. So I'll talk a little bit more specifically about that video soon. So after that Brady hearing, like I said, the defense scored, you know, a win there. And they were on a roll for a little bit, because on September 16th, the prosecution faced a major blow when the trial date was set. Remember that they were pushing to get as late of a start as possible so that they could have enough time to build their case and get all of the DNA evidence back. Well, that did not work. The schedules were such that the only days that worked for both sides, because of, you know, other schedule conflicts, other trials, you know, et cetera, would have the trial starting in less than 3 months on December 9th, 2024. So this is September 16th that we had this, and the prosecution was trying to get this to start in like late January, basically as late as they could, and they ended up with December 9th. The trial was scheduled to last for 6 days. However, it turned out that none of it actually mattered, because that trial would not begin on December 9th after all. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right, it's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep,
can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The TrueAge test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. When Naresh Bhatt was denied bond in district court, he had the option to appeal that decision in circuit court. On September 20th, 2024, that's exactly what he did. Judge Kimberly Irving presided in what I'm only guessing had to have been the longest bond hearing this court had ever seen for a Class 6 felony charge. It lasted for nearly 3 hours and was extremely difficult to listen to at times. And what we got that day, I don't think a lot of us knew what to expect, because again, bond hearings are not that long usually. For instance, I went to Timothy Hickerson's bond appeal hearing. I went to actually his bond hearing and his bond appeal hearing. The bond appeal hearing was longer, and it was over in less than half an hour. And that was for second degree murder. This bond appeal hearing was for a Class 6 felony, which is punishable by like 2 to 5 years in jail and a $1,000 fine, I think. So it really goes to show just how much of an impact this case has been making in the area. So we got a lot of bombshells at this hearing. The first one came from the defense when it was revealed that Detective Ventura, the lead detective on the case, put false information in her request for an arrest warrant. The application was short, and it said in part, quote, "A substantial amount of digital and forensic evidence consistent with her death was recovered," end quote. But below that was a handwritten section that said, quote, "There was evidence in the residence indicating the body was inside the residence and dragged out of the residence," end quote. The problem is, that was not true. There was no evidence that the body was dragged outside of the home. Detective Ventura eventually admitted to this, and her captain wrote a letter stating that as well.
Didn't the captain also say that there initially wasn't enough to get some of the search warrants, and that's why this was added, but the wording got confused as far as where the body had been dragged?
Yeah, basically, that was the defense, that she had just kind of gotten confused, because there was evidence that the body had been dragged from the bedroom to the ensuite bathroom. Basically, what the defense is contending is that she took this application for an arrest warrant to the magistrate. The magistrate looked at it and was like, no, this isn't enough. So she just handwrote that last part in.
Mm.
Now, the defense, of course, is saying she just made that up to get an arrest.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the police and the prosecution are saying it was an honest mistake.
Mm. Not great for the prosecution.
No. Very shady. That was their, you know, big argument, was that like he shouldn't have been arrested in the first place. Now, Judge Irving said, listen, I get what you're saying. Like, she didn't just dismiss that and say, no, it was fine. But she said, this is a bond hearing. Like, that's a separate issue that we can't really address at this point. So the rest of his argument was basically trying to make Naresh's statements and actions seem less suspicious. Now, again, in our last episode, we talked about his initial bond hearing in which the prosecution laid out a good deal of evidence against him. And, you know, there had been other news reports, press conferences, et cetera, et cetera. Plus Naresh's own words, right? There were his words in the body cam video. There were his interviews with Katie Lusso from Channel 9, where he was just saying weird, suspicious things, basically. Naresh's attorney was basically just trying to mitigate all of that. He talked about how the police told Naresh not to file a missing persons report right away. He also brought up the incident in February in which police were called to the home. Now, this was brought up at his original bond hearing. Mr. Ben Alverham made sure to reiterate that this was not a domestic violence call, though, which is kind of how the prosecution had been painting it. And that when police arrived, Mamta asked for access to her documents. So she was claiming that Naresh had taken like her green card or passport, those kinds of documents, and wouldn't give them back. So that's what she told the police. The police were like, okay, give her her stuff back. And Naresh said, okay. And he gave her her stuff back. Then, you know, the police were like, okay, everything else okay? They both said yes. The police left.
Yeah, so not a full-on domestic call. However, it's pretty big red flag there.
Right. And it's something that the police officers who did the welfare check were not aware of at the time.
Oh, interesting.
So they apparently did not check to see if like there had been any other calls to the house or anything like that.
Huh.
Because that was not brought up on the body cam video.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Nothing.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. The defense also brought up several issues that the prosecution used in the original bond hearing, including the fact that Naresh bought a 3-pack of kitchen knives at Walmart. Mr. Ben Alverham said that they were cheap knives that anyone would buy. It was a 3-pack. They're priced between like $9.99 and $14.99, he said, and that it wasn't suspicious. He also said that the prosecution bringing up the fact that Naresh was trying to sell the house also wasn't evidence that he was a flight risk, because he had been trying to do that prior to Mamta's disappearance.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things by themselves are not suspicious, but lumping them all together, again, it doesn't look good.
Right, right. No, I mean, I agree. And so he also brought up the Tesla. Now, if you recall from our last episode, we learned that Naresh had sold his Tesla on August 19th, 3 days prior to his arrest. The police were able to recover the Tesla, but at the time of that last recording, we weren't sure if they were going to be able to get any of the video, GPS, like any of the information from when Naresh had the Tesla.
Right, let alone any forensic evidence that may or may not have been left in the car.
Exactly. So that was a big question mark at the time. And as of this hearing, to the public, it was still a question mark. Like, we still didn't know. But the defense brought it up, and he said that the police must not have been able to retrieve any evidence from the car, because if investigators had any indication that the Tesla was parked somewhere suspicious, then they would have said that. And he said that there was nothing incriminating in the Tesla data.
The defense is saying there's nothing incriminating in the Tesla data.
Yeah. Which was a really bold statement, considering that, as we found out, the defense didn't have the Tesla data.
Right.
So they didn't actually know what it was.
Yeah.
But I guess he was going on the word of his client and said, hey, you know, there must have been nothing incriminating there, because they would have said something and they've been quiet about it.
Mm. Not a great strategy.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the Tesla later. The defense's other main argument was against the Blue Star technology used by the investigators. And remember, that is a technology that's basically the newer version of Luminol, which is how the forensic investigators found a lot of the blood in Mamta Naresh's bedroom and bathroom. The defense basically said that the way the blood was tested made it appear as that there was more blood than there actually was, because the prosecution was contending that the amount of blood found was not compatible with life, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So the defense is saying it is, because it's not actually that much blood. The analogy he used with Blue Star, it's like putting something into a bucket of water, and you could put a drop of blood into a bucket of water and it spreads out and makes it look like there's a lot more blood than there actually is. So he was kind of saying that. Plus, he was saying that, you know, there had been blood that had been cleaned up, but it was just like normal blood that sometimes happens in people's houses, and that the act of spot cleaning had actually like spread the stain and made it appear larger than it was.
I mean, I don't know the science behind blue stars, so it that very well could be true. I don't know.
Right. So that was kind of what he was going with. And so he was contending that they didn't have enough blood to prove that even if it was from Manta, which we did not know at that point, that even if it was hers, they didn't have enough to prove that she was no longer alive. And if you can't prove that she's dead, how can you convict his client of concealing a dead body?
It's a fair point.
Yeah. So the defense also reiterated that Naresh Bhatt served in the U.S. Army and had security clearances. He's also a U.S. citizen and had no criminal record. Because remember, when you're at a bond hearing, the two things that you're trying to prove in order to get your client bond is that they are not a danger to the community and they are not a flight risk. Those are the two things that the judge is looking at when they are determining whether or not to grant bond. So he was just saying, listen, all of this stuff that the prosecution's been saying is kind of being blown out of proportion. Plus, he's not a flight risk because, like, he's an Army veteran, he's a citizen, like, we'll give you his passport, we'll do a GPS monitor, we'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
He concluded by saying, quote, they don't have enough. What got him arrested was a false statement by a police officer in a criminal complaint, end quote. The prosecution opened their arguments by showing that full 14-minute body cam footage from the August 2nd welfare check. I mentioned earlier that Naresh talked a lot during that, so I'm not going to go over the entire 14 minutes, but here are a few highlights. He said that she had left either the previous Tuesday or Wednesday to go to New York or Texas to visit her sister, and that she had destroyed her cell phone prior to leaving. As you do.
Yeah, like why?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's to explain why nobody could get a hold of her.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand why he's covering, creating that story, but like, I just destroyed my cell phone.
Yeah.
You know?
And then left the state.
Yeah.
And with leaving my 11-month-old daughter behind. But yeah. All right. He also said that this was not the first time she had left. You know, he was basically like, listen, she pulls this all the time. And that, you know, on this occasion, she took her regular things with her, meaning, I think, you know, clothes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He also said that he expected her home on Saturday or Sunday, and that if she didn't come home, he'd have to hire someone to take care of the baby.
No explanation as to why he was expecting her home. So, like, he said that she just left.
Yeah.
Maybe to Texas, maybe to New York. She'll come. She's coming back on Saturday.
Yeah, I think the idea was that they were getting ready to separate, and she left to go either cool off or find a new place to live, and that once she kind of figured things out, she was going to come back for the baby.
Mm.
So that's kind of what he was saying to the police. But then the police were kind of trying to wrap it up, and he also just threw in that she had mental issues. After the video, the Commonwealth attorney, Mr. Sweet, got up to speak. He addressed Naresh's assertion that Mamta had gone missing before. And what he said is that Mamta had not gone missing before this. She had fled from an abusive scenario and had taken her baby with her. Now, to be clear, I've heard from Mamta's friends that that's not exactly true. When she did leave Naresh back in, I believe it was March, she did leave the baby at the home. Naresh's parents were there as well. But Naresh and Naresh's parents knew where Mamta was staying, and they would drop the baby off with Mamta to take care of, like, when she wasn't at work. So she's never left without telling people where she was, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And without making plans for her baby. He then said something that just punched me in the gut when I heard it in the courtroom. He said, quote, she didn't voluntarily leave this man. She was disposed of by this man, end quote. And that's actually the first time I've ever read that without crying. Like, because, I mean, I've had to read that quote in a couple of videos, And like, yeah, it always gets me. Miss Sammy, the other Commonwealth attorney, then got up and very meticulously laid out the case against Naresh Bhatt. Now, a lot of this was covered in the initial bond hearing, but with a lot more detail. It also includes a lot of new evidence that they had gotten in the intervening weeks. Now, this is the part that's difficult to hear, so please take that into consideration. Miss Sammy admitted that they had a purely circumstantial case. She said that Mamta was no call, no show at work on August 1st and August 2nd, and that she does not actually have a sister who lives in the U.S., in New York, or Texas. She does have a close friend who apparently does live in, I think, New York, but no sister. She also pointed out that Naresh has given vastly different stories about when he last saw her. He initially said that they had dinner together on July 31st, and he heard a noise on the morning of August 1st and assumed that it was just her getting ready for work. That's what he told the reporter, Katie Lusso, but that's not what he initially told police during the welfare check. And I did a whole video actually comparing what he told the reporter versus what he said on the body cam footage and all of the contradictions that he had in those two statements. Now, by this time, the police had served over 25 search warrants. And through these various warrants, they were able to construct a timeline. So this is the complete timeline as we know it. On July 27th at 8:17 p.m., Mamta was picked up outside of her hospital. On July 28th, Naresh was in Baltimore for a good portion of the day. Mamta was home. And at 6:03 p.m., she sent a Facebook message to somebody about some jewelry that she had bought. At 8:25 and 8:58 p.m., Mamta attempted to contact Naresh, and she was at home when she did this. Naresh ended up returning home from Baltimore at 12:29 a.m. on July 29th. Phone records show that both of them were home for the majority of that day, the 29th. At 8:30 p.m., Mamta spoke with her mom via Facebook video call. This call lasted 14 minutes and was the last time the two spoke. Mamta was in constant communication with her mother. They usually spoke twice a day. On July 30th at 5:40 a.m., Naresh sent a text to their babysitter named Amanda and asked if he could drop the baby off after 8 a.m. He ended up dropping the baby off at Amanda's at around 6:30 a.m. And at 6:44 a.m., there is video of him discarding bags in a dumpster at her apartment complex. Between July 30th and July 31st, Naresh is seen discarding many different bags at different dump sites. At 6:53 a.m. on the 30th, Naresh returned home. At 8:12 a.m., there is video of him at Home Depot buying two pairs of rubber gloves. At 8:41 a.m., he's on video at Walmart buying a three-pack of knives. The two largest ones from the pack have not been recovered. At 11:09 a.m. was the first missed call from Mamta's mom. At 3:45 p.m., Naresh picks up his baby from the babysitter. He then parked his Tesla by the same dumpster, which is far away from the apartment. At 5:22 p.m., he goes to a Lidl and buys a 40-pack of extra-strong black trash bags. On July 31st at 1:30 a.m., there's a video of him in Falls Church wearing white gloves, retrieving trash bags from his trunk. He discards them into a trash compactor. Miss Sammy said that one bag is, quote, pretty significant, and he had to put his hand on the bottom of the trash bag to support it. He didn't have his phone during this time, and he was tracked by the Tesla. At 8 a.m. on July 31st, Naresh dropped the baby off at the babysitter again. The babysitter later told police that Naresh was nervous when he did this. Video shows him driving by the same dumpster at the apartment complex slowly and looking at it. At 1:10 p.m., the Tesla is seen on a license plate reader in Fairfax County. It's seen on other plate readers at 1:28 p.m. and 1:47 p.m. At 2 p.m., CCTV shows him in Walmart buying cleaning supplies. And this is a different Walmart from the one that he bought the knives at. At 5:30 p.m., there is a video of him at the dumpster back at the babysitter's apartment complex. He has two trash bags and he's wearing white gloves again. He does not pick up his baby at this time. He comes back an hour and a half later to do that. That timeline is part of its information that we had. All the stuff from the Tesla and the actual like dumping of the bags is new. We had the Walmart purchases before. We did not have the Home Depot or the Lidl purchases before. So those were new information. That was new information. Then she got into the water usage at the home. She said that on July 31st, between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m., 150 gallons of water was consumed. Luckily, she gave some context to that because, like, I have no idea how much water is typically used in a house. And she said that the typical water usage in that house was between 3 to 4 gallons an hour.
Yikes.
So a significant increase. Then she talked about the Blue Star technology and got into more detail on that. So some of this is what she covered in the original Bond hearing, but again, just a little bit more detail. So she said that in their bedroom, he had the bed against the wall closest to the door, and that there was a 1 foot wide streak mark through the master bedroom, and that there was oval pooling that was darker in parts. They saw this through the Blue Star technology. It had been cleaned up. The presumptive tests did show that it was positive for blood. But again, we didn't have the DNA tests, so we didn't know whose blood.
Right.
There was also blood spatter on the right-hand side wall close to the drag marks. The shower, they had a separate shower and bathtub. The shower basically lit up when they used the Blue Star on that. On the bathroom floor, there is an outline of an item in the bathroom, so it looked like something had been removed. Mm. The bathroom also has two windows, one of which was missing a blind. They ended up finding a blind that matched the other one that was in the bathroom in the closet in the bedroom, and they found blood spatter on the blind that was visible to the naked eye. They also had brought cadaver dogs into the home, and the cadaver dogs hit in both the bedroom and the bathroom. Then she got into Google searches. On July 30th at 4:13 a.m., Naresh searched Google for diagram of brain. Then at 4:30 a.m., he searched chicken farm near me. And that's one that we've never been able to really figure out.
Yeah, chicken farm. I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's one that's still a mystery, honestly. On August 1st, Naresh's phone was off, and Mamta's phone pinged in Loudoun County. Naresh told police, actually, that he had been at a cafe in that area and even produced a receipt. There was a Liberty gas station nearby, and CCTV shows Naresh walking with a limp and going into a cafe. He eats and walks back to his car. He then grabs some bags from his car and walks over to a donation bin, like within the complex. He used a napkin or paper to hold the bags and threw them in the bin. Now, because this was a donation bin and not a dumpster, it hadn't been emptied. So police were able to go there and recover bags. And what they found was a bag with a white bath mat with pink/brown stains. The presumptive tests showed that those stains were blood. There was blood on the bags as well. Now, a lot of people have asked about the tenants who lived in their basement. It was a Colombian family who lived in the basement. The parents allegedly worked nights, and I don't know about the ages of the kids or what was going on there. But sometime after August 2nd, which was when the welfare check was, Naresh asked them to help him move the bed. So one or both of them, you know, some of the neighbors had gone up and helped him move the bed over to the other wall. After that ping in Loudoun County on August 1st, there was no further activity on Momta's phone. She also missed her USCIS appointment for citizenship, which, if I recall, was on August 7th, and was a huge, huge, huge appointment that she never would have missed if she could help it. Then they talked about the February incident and, you know, said, yes, it was not reported as domestic violence, but there was a history of domestic violence in the house. She said that a photo of Momta with a bloody face and a swollen eye was sent to her brother. She sent it to her brother and told him to hold on to it. He then made some other Google searches. He searched for uncontested divorce time and what happens if spouse disappears with divorce and what happened debt of died spouse.
Jesus.
He also Googled in April, Happy New Year message to girlfriend. Now, that may seem weird, but the Nepali New Year is in April.
Okay.
On August 16th, he said that he wanted to send the baby to Nepal. Now she's kind of moving on to the flight risk portion of this, right? So all of that was to prove that, you know, he's a danger to society. Now she's saying why he's a flight risk. So she said that, you know, he had said publicly that he wanted to send the baby to Nepal. Remember the first time that police searched their house, they found suitcases and passports and all that kind of stuff. The Tesla was sold right after Manassas Park police asked for consent to search it. He also disabled the timing advance at the end of August, and that is the location data. A Manassas Park police detective spoke with two people who said that Naresh wanted to sell his home. And that all of these actions indicate that he's a flight risk. She also went back to the issue of domestic violence and said that there was a witness who saw Naresh slap Momta after she poured a bowl of rice on his head.
Okay.
Momta also confided in coworkers and friends and posted in Facebook groups. She said, quote, "We believe we have enough to sustain the charge before the court today," end quote. So the defense got back on and said, basically, like, this isn't as suspicious as they're making it. Same kind of thing. It's like, okay, he went to Lidl. He bought trash bags. Like, everybody buys trash bags. He was planning on moving. He had a lot of trash. And he said, yeah, he went to all these different dumpsters to drop off the trash. Because a lot of times when you have, like, a residential trash pickup, you can only leave so much out there. And if you have multiple bags, the garbage truck isn't going to pick it up. So that's why he was going to dump all these different trash bags at different sites.
I mean, so yes, trash in particular, Fairfax County, Loudoun County, like, yeah, they're not going to, if you have overflowing bags or whatever, basically if it doesn't fit in your trash bin, they're not going to take it.
Yeah.
But to go through the trouble of dropping those bags off at various locations randomly around,
like, and in the middle of the night sometimes.
And to have gloves on while you're doing it,
yeah,
that's pretty suspicious.
Right.
So I wanted to let you get through the timeline and the evidence that the prosecution was presenting before I interrupted you.
Okay.
The first thing that strikes me is that the baby was in the house when he did it, because he didn't take the baby over to the babysitters until the following morning, right?
Yeah, I mean, more than likely.
Yeah.
So prosecutors have this narrowed down to sometime after 8:45 p.m. on July 29th and prior to 11 a.m. on the 30th.
Right.
The 11 a.m. is a little squishier. That's just when her mom called the first time and, you know, didn't get her.
Right. But at that point, he had already gone to the babysitters and started disposing of bags.
Yeah, he texted the babysitter at 5:40 a.m. and dropped the baby off at 6:30 and then, discarded the first bags at 6:44.
Which means he not only murdered her the night before, but he started dismembering her body before the baby was even out of the house.
I think that's a definite possibility. In terms of the dismemberment, there's a possibility that those initial bags could have just been other evidence.
Sure, that's true. I'm extrapolating.
No, I know. And it's just, it's hard. It's really difficult to think about. But yes, based on the timeline, you know, it doesn't appear as though Amanda, this babysitter, was supposed to watch the baby on the morning of July 30th.
Yeah.
Mamta, that was her day off. And, you know, Mamta made good money from what I understand, but Naresh's job, I still haven't nailed down when he got fired from his job, if he had already been fired or whatever, but I know there were money issues. And we talked about this before where their mortgage and the car payment, like it was just so much money that was going out every month. And I know that money was just a huge issue in this house. And so was childcare. So Mamta was very careful about using babysitters. And she did use babysitters, but it sounds like only when it was like absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
So one of them texting this babysitter at 5:30 a.m., you know, on a day where, again, Mamta was supposed to have the day off, is very out of the ordinary. And I think, yeah, does indicate that we probably can narrow that timeline to 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And you're right, the baby was there. So basically, like I was saying, the defense was saying, okay, people have garbage bags, people dump garbage bags in dumpsters. That's not weird. He also said that the prosecution has evidence of stuff, not evidence of death or body parts. And he also said that Blue Star can't tell if the blood is all from the same time.
True.
Yeah. So that's kind of what he was saying. But basically what happened was the judge said that the evidence was overwhelming, that the cadaver dog's hitting supports that there is a dead body, and he has no family ties, no employment, and that she does believe he's a flight risk. So she said he was a danger to the community and he was a flight risk, and so he was denied bond. After bond was denied, the defense filed a motion for a Franks hearing. Now, this was a hearing in which they were going to try to get the arrest warrant thrown out based on the false information from Detective Ventura. After being postponed once, the defense eventually withdrew the motion. So we never got a reason on that.
Hmm.
But yeah, so it was supposed to be in October. It got postponed till November, and then it was just withdrawn.
Huh.
We didn't know what that was about. I was wondering if a plea deal was coming, and that's why they
because you would think that
that's kind of because the hearing was weird. It was a short hearing, and Naresh's lawyer was like very cryptic. He said that, you know, concessions had been made and on both sides, and that maybe he would file another motion for a Franks hearing in the future, but he was going to withdraw it for now. And Judge Irving was like, okay, well, this trial's about to start, so you don't have a lot of time. And we had it on the books, so I'm not necessarily going to give it the same priority that I gave it before. But all of it ended up being moot anyway. Every time I've released a video on this case, I always have people commenting asking when the DNA results are coming back. Did we have the DNA results? After all, without a body, you really need some good forensic evidence to convict somebody of concealing a dead body. I had assumed that the results had come back maybe sometime in October or November, but that they just hadn't made it public because they were waiting for the trial to make it public. Like, there was no reason for them to really publicize that, you know? Yeah. So I was like, yeah, we'll get it, but, you know, I'm sure they have it. Yeah, it turns out I was wrong. The results of the DNA evidence, which was submitted back at the end of August, didn't come back until the end of November, like the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so when it did come back, it was confirmed that the blood found in Mamta Naresh's home did, in fact, belong to Mamta. And it turns out this is all the prosecution was waiting for. The next grand jury date was December 2nd, and on that day, the grand jury voted to indict Naresh Bhatt for first-degree murder and defiling a dead body. Like concealing a dead body, defiling a dead body is a Class 6 felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. However, the maximum sentence for first-degree murder in Virginia is life in prison. Just to be clear, the charge of defiling a dead body did come from the prosecution's belief that he did dismember her. These new charges on December 2nd changed everything. Remember, the trial was supposed to start a week later on December 9th, and there was a pretrial hearing on December 4th. So I went to that hearing, and instead of, you know, just a normal, like, pretrial hearing, the defense and prosecution filed a joint motion for a continuance. At the hearing, Naresh came in and actually looked at the gallery, which I've never seen him do before. He usually just comes in and stares straight at his lawyer, doesn't look back, doesn't acknowledge anyone else. He also put his head in his hands and shook his head when the judge talked about the new charges against him. Now that he is facing murder charges, Naresh and his attorneys are no longer trying to rush this case through the court system.
So weird.
Yeah. Instead, he waived his right to a speedy trial on these charges. That means that instead of the trial having to begin prior to May 2nd, 2025, because again, it's the 5-month rule, December 2nd to May 2nd,
right?
They set the trial date for September 8th. Instead of 6 days for the one charge of concealing a dead body, this trial is going to cover all three charges and is slated to last for 16 days going into October. So yeah, so 16 days in Prince William Court is 3 weeks because they only do trials Monday through Thursday usually.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, I think they only usually do trials Monday through Wednesday, and then they added Thursday on because this was so long.
I mean, if this goes to trial, I wouldn't be surprised if they added time.
Yeah.
16 days, given the amount of evidence, is actually not a lot.
Yeah, it really isn't. And considering the amount of time that it took to just get through the bond appeal, I don't see this. And they've been talking for months about, you know, witnesses that they're going to be bringing in who are from out of the state or even out of the country.
Yeah.
You've got all of the CCTV footage from the stores. You have the Tesla video footage. You have the Tesla GPS. You have the phone data.
Yeah. And whoever presents any of that has to be crossed by the other side.
Exactly.
Which is why this is going to take so long.
Yeah. I think they're going to be a lot of witnesses.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. I think this is going to be a very long trial.
If it
happens.
In fact, makes it to trial.
Yeah,
because the other thing that we have seen in cases, and by we, I don't mean you and I mean just generally speaking, anybody that follows true crime, when something like this happens and you're sitting in jail for almost a year, kind of changes your perspective on things.
Yeah.
You're kind of sweating it out in jail and you're like, well, maybe I could knock that first degree down to a second degree murder charge and maybe not spend my life in prison.
Right. And yeah, by the time this trial is slated to start, he will have been in jail for over a year. It'll be about 13 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, we may see it. You know, you never know. Like some of these cases end up going to trial, like the other ones that we've covered with Akia Eggleston, Cody and Corey Bigsby. Like we ended up having trials there. But, you know, I was going to cover the local trial here of Ronald Rolden, who was convicted of killing Bethany Decker. And we were all set to go to trial and he ended up pleading guilty like a week before the trial was scheduled to start. So a lot can happen between now and September 2025.
Yeah.
And as of this recording, which we are doing on December 12th, 2024, nothing much is on the docket in Naresh's case until March of next year. Court TV has requested to film the trial, which the defense does not want. So there probably will be a hearing about that in January or February. So I'll keep you updated there. I'm going to continue to cover any updates like that over on TikTok and YouTube. And when we have major updates or the trial, you can be sure that I'll be covering it here. If you have any information regarding Mom Takafle's disappearance, you're asked to contact the Manassas Park Police Department at 703-361-1136. His phone number is monitored 24 hours a day. If you wish to remain anonymous, you can contact the Manassas/Manassas Park Crime Solvers at 703-330-0330. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!